Checkerfin.
Board was always in my head.
Checkerfin. Checkerfin.
Yes.
It's the education gadfly.
Sex Nexus.
Mike and Rick tell you
early college, high school, pain and suffering,
learning and teaching.
In your face, in your face, in your face.
Listen to your words that they be preaching, cause here's the education gadfly show. Yeah.
Hello, this is your host Mike Petrilli at the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, here with my co-host, Rick Hess.
Hey, Mike.
How are you, Rick?
Good. It's been a while, man.
It's been a long time since we've been on the air, because somebody has been on vacation.
I try.
Rick, some people write in, they say, isn't Rick always on vacation?
Ow.
And yet, you're so productive. What is your secret? I mean, you write like 7 or 8 books a year, and yet you seem to be on vacation all the time.
The nice thing about our line of work,
yes,
is vacation lets you work.
Ah. So you're working? You were in Hawaii on honeymoon?
Oh, I actually wasn't. But sometimes one can seem to apparently be on vacation and be thinking deep thoughts and writing like a Dickens.
All right. Well, you know, there's a lot that's been going on since we've been on the air. There's this minor thing about a presidential election. There's this economy.
I hope we've been able to keep up with it even without.
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure if people have. I think they tune into the Education Gadfly show for all of their election coverage.
Ooh.
As well as for the their coverage about the economy.
Mm.
The folks, my former colleagues over at the U.S. Department of Education are still staying busy. In the waning days, I've noticed they've been giving out the NCLB Blue Ribbon Awards.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Story today that one of those awards went to a charter school in Arizona that serves the polygamous community of Arizona.
Is this a bad thing?
Well, I don't know. I mean, these are children that have, you know, I guess what, 2 or 3 or 4 mommies.
Uh-huh.
And a daddy.
Heather has 2 mommies?
Yeah.
And, maybe 3?
And but I'm not sure that it's really, you know, NCLB is already a damaged brand. Do you really want people associating NCLB with polygamy?
Mm.
Of course, it's also a charter school.
Kind of rhymes.
It does.
NCLB and polygamy. Mm. You know, another thing that's going on is they created the performance index.
What's that?
Margaret Spelling's announced at the Aspen thing, her 5-part performance index.
Oh.
Where you roll together college matriculation and achievement gaps and you come up with a number. I think our number is 42.3.
And you think this is going to take off? I think people are going to really.
I think we're at, apparently, if I remember it right, I believe we're at a 42.3 nationally.
So let's talk about the Aspen thing briefly. And then we do have to get on with the show because we've got a lot to cover. But big National Education Summit held last week. Aspen Institute convened it.
Mm.
I, at the end of the day, just decided I just couldn't handle going to it. But you were there, Rick.
Only a little bit of it.
Is our education system about to be transformed because of this summit?
No, but I think pretty much everybody has agreed on the appropriate set of buzzwords for 08, 09.
What are they?
Crisis.
Crisis, okay.
Challenges.
Okay.
India.
India.
China.
Economic competitiveness.
Competitiveness. Math and science achievement.
International benchmarking. So I want you to all know that before,
human capital.
You know, while you were away, Rick, and we had this break, I want you to know that I did a special international benchmarking study of all of the education reform podcasts from around the world. And we are now using internationally benchmarked best practices on the show.
Wow.
Yeah. So let's get on with it. We got a lot to cover. We will, of course, play Pardon the Gadfly. We will hear from Stafford and her Rate That Reform. And, of course, Amber's Research Minute.
So, of course.
Of course. So let's get going. Let's play Pardon the Gadfly.
Buzzword number 1, the election. Obama gave a big speech in Ohio a few weeks ago where he called for doubling federal funding for charter schools. Yet he was vague about NCLB's accountability provisions. Is it easier for a Democrat these days to support school choice rather than supporting accountability?
No, it's easy for a Democrat to be fuzzy on everything. So Obama is for more money for choice. In vague, broadly described ways. And he's for more money for classrooms and teacher salaries. And he's vaguely for principles of accountability. He likes the principles of NCLB. He just doesn't like any of the particulars, but he's not very explicit about which particulars he doesn't like.
Right. So he's just for everything. Is that that's the bottom line?
You know, this was what LBJ ran with in 64. He said, I'm for more of just about everything for just about everybody.
Yeah. Well, now, Rick, though, let's ask this question. I mean, why is it that right now there seems to be more coalescing around charter schools than there is around accountability? I mean, that seems significant to me. It seemed like just a few years ago we were having conversations about charter schools sort of peaking, that all of a sudden there was a real battle breaking out again, particularly on the left. And now you've got both candidates falling over themselves to say that they love charter schools. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure that Obama's pushing much harder for charter schools today than Al Gore did in 2000. So that's I'm not convinced that. I do think that accountability. We are obviously very much on kind of the downslope of an accountability cycle, where you know it's very easy to score points by dinging accountability. But notice that Obama actually, as much to my mind, is much more likely to praise accountability in principle mm-hmm. and say we just need to do it right and to put more money in
right.
than he is to praise school choice in principle. Mm-hmm.
By the way, you notice one person we didn't talk much about, John McCain.
That's right. He's running.
Well, he hasn't really said much on education.
Skip McCain, but how about Palin? Where does she stand on
accountability?
That's
a good question. I knew you would be a big Sarah Palin fan, Rick.
I thought it was, you know, I was in Hawaii and McCain walked out on the stage with somebody and I thought it was Tina Fey. I swear to God.
Yeah, yeah.
I was so confused.
Is this rumor true that a couple years ago, Sarah Palin went dressed for Halloween party as Tina Fey? I've heard that. We've heard that. This is a rumor. Okay. Well, we're not sure.
Well, somebody's heard it. It's clearly got to be true.
It's clearly happened. And the Saturday Night Live skit was pretty darn good. Okay, Christina, what's topic number two?
The economy. It doesn't look so good. If you ran a school system and had to trim your budget, where would you cut?
Well, this is an important question, Christina, because there are a lot of school districts out there facing some challenging financial times. But you know what? They don't have to panic. The first thing they should not do is just fire their newly hired teachers. That is about as boneheaded a thing as you can possibly do. Had a situation, Rick, just a couple years ago in Dayton, Ohio, where Fordham has home offices. Homer Nightstep was the teacher of the year in Dayton. He was a troops to teachers teacher, great teacher, making a huge impact at a school that was 100% poverty. But the district had a financial crisis, and under state law, it was last hired, first fired. Mm-hmm. Homer Nightstep was out of there, ends up moving across district lines to an affluent suburban school that already is at like 100% proficiency where he's teaching. Now, this is crazy. So my main point is this. Fire bad teachers and bad administrators. You could save a lot of money.
I think that's a really good starting point. B, you know, we're guaranteed to hear in the next couple of years about the huge hits that state budgets are taking. We always hear, right, whenever we go through the recession,
yeah.
A recessionary cycle. The reality, of course, is districts across the country, K-12 funding is always up over the previous year. They're never actually taking cuts. It's just the increases aren't as large as though they would like or those they budgeted on. Mm-hmm. So one thing is that parents and voters and policymakers need to keep an eye on is not to allow districts to plead poverty when they're actually getting more money this year than they did last year, just not as much as they would have liked to get. I will say that if I was running a district, I think my strategy would be the Rudy Cruz strategy, which is you spend massively out of your rainy day fund. You spend 40, 50, 60 million over in each of the previous 2 years. You spend the rainy day fund down from 150 million to 4 million. Mm-hmm. You manage to use these dollars to try to drive achievement results. And then when the board members worry that you have been fiscally responsible, you get to say, hey, I'm about academic achievement. It's your job to worry about dollars and cents.
Mm-hmm. You know, those are big words, Rick, considering that you graduated from Fairfax County Schools that announced today it's going to spend $125 million on its new headquarters.
Indeed. And in fact, you know, in places like Montgomery County and Fairfax, they, you know, whenever the County Board of Supervisors wants a budget cut, mostly you get a lot of concerns from the school boards in those places that, my goodness, how can we possibly run quality schools without all the money we'd like to have?
All right. Topic number three, Christina.
Algebra. Tommy Lovelace has a new study out this week that shows that twice as many kids are taking, quote, algebra, unquote, but that their NAEP scores are falling. Are these fake algebra classes? Why did this happen? What can we do about it?
So what do you think? Fake? So clearly this is just a matter of relabeling courses.
Well, something's going on, right? I mean, it's either relabeling courses or we're teaching algebra more poorly than we were. Or we're watering down content as we're trying to drive kids into it.
Rick, twice as many kids today are mm-hmm. taking algebra as 15 years ago.
Right.
Right. Now, do you really believe that twice as many kids are taking
This is like algebra? AP. This is like AP. Right? I mean, this is across the board in high achieving classes. We're pushing kids into these things because everybody would like to say, most of our ninth graders are, you know, we've got many eighth graders in algebra, or all our ninth graders are required to take algebra. But they can't do the work, and so we change what's getting taught.
Yeah, but it's not like AP, because at least in AP, you've got some standards.
No, but we've seen this across the board in AP, of course, that we've watered down the content of APs.
Well, we don't know that.
Sure, we do. I mean, right, we know that passage rates have declined as numbers
No, they haven't. I mean, that's the thing. In AP, at least, there seems to be a standard that's staying there, at least if kids are taking the test. The problem with algebra is you don't necessarily have assessments in algebra, so any school or district can just relabel their courses as algebra.
Mm-hmm.
What used to be business math last year is algebra this year.
Mm-hmm.
It's an outrage.
You know, it's,
Rick, I mean, I feel like I kind of shut you down on that.
Well, I mean, if I would argue that if you look across the all of the AP exams, I mean, actually, so it's an empirical. We'll have to go refer to this stuff. But certainly, I think it's a 100% problem. Mm-hmm. If you announce that 100% of kids are going to hit proficiency, you create real incentives to change what proficiency means.
Mm-hmm.
If you announce that a lot more kids are going to take algebra, you create huge incentives to start to change what algebra means.
It's all X times Y equals Z. Isn't that what you're saying, Rick?
Yeah. Nice.
Well, now it's time for our Research Minute with Amber Winkler.
You search, we search, research. It's the Gadfly Research Minute.
You know, it's kind of sad. Kobe has left the show and left the Fordham Institute, and yet his voice remains behind in that beautiful rendition.
It's a beautiful thing.
It's a beautiful thing. So, Kobe, this one's for you. Amber, tell us, what's the topic of the Research Minute today?
The topic of the Research Minute is teaching as a second career. Okay? Teaching as a second career. Are you guys going to start timing me? Because I'm feeling good about this timing thing
and
today.
Go.
All right. A study came out by the Woodrow Wilson National Fellowship Foundation. It starts off by saying we're going to need 2 million teachers over the next decade to replace retiring baby boomers. Questionable, because they don't even think about online distance learning and that type of thing. But we're going to let that slide. And they found that basically 40% of college-educated Americans would indeed consider teaching. The problem, however, they all say, is the pay. A majority would say that they know that they'd have to take a pay cut, and they would be unhappy about that. The sweet spot salary that they say they'd have to have, a minimum of $50,000. Average teaching salary, about $31,000. We got a little gap there.
Teacher salary?
Yes, indeed. According to our friends at the AFT. So there's a gap there. They didn't really give us too many policy implications. One, clearly, is to give mid-career professionals some credit for their previous experience by starting them several gaps up the salary line.
Okay. And what's the song for this week for you?
The song is Nelly. Remember this song, Must Be the Money? Remember that? You want to ride with me? Da, 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 da.
All right. Let's hear it. Okay, Amber. Well, very interesting. Well, you know, I actually, as I hear that research, I think to myself, okay, $50,000 of salary, that's doable. I mean, there's some affluent districts that are starting people.
Actually, nationally, average teacher salary is high 40s.
Right.
We're pretty much right there.
Yeah, so if you can just start mid-career people higher up on the ladder, as you said, you know, we should be able to do that.
If you could start them in a range. And in fact, you know, this is a lot like when you ask people how much their school district is spending.
Mm-hmm.
People want their district to spend a lot more. But when you ask them how much they're spending, they usually guess about half what they actually are spending.
Right.
People say, oh, teaching, you know, it would have to be a lot more money than it is. But yep. The reality is they frequently massively underestimate how much teachers earn.
I still suspect that a lot of those people that are saying they would do it for $50,000 would not actually.
Yeah, it's the or more part.
Or more. Right. Okay, thank you, Amber Winkler, with our Research Minute. And now we are joined by our special correspondent, Stafford, with our new segment, Rate That Reform. Stafford, we did hear from some listeners last time about Rate That Reform. There was some confusion about how exactly we were rating those reforms. So tell us, what criteria are we using and what's the reform we're rating this week?
All right. Well, our criteria are going to be the following. There are two criteria. First one is problem definition. So we're going to be asking, is the point of the reform something that schools should be handling? You can consider this in two ways. Theoretically, i.e. what role should schools be playing in the lives of students and of society? Or financially, i.e. as a concerned taxpayer, would you pay for this reform or think that others should be paying for it? And the second criteria is execution. This is also twofold. Does this proposed policy solution address the problem properly? And is the implementation strategy going to be successful?
Oh, Stafford, this is making my head hurt. All right, let me ask you this one.
What she's just sketched is relatively elegant 2x2.
Yeah, it is. Still makes my head hurt. Okay, bottom line, is this going to be funny?
Yes.
Okay, all right, go ahead.
Well, I'm working on it, Mike. I'm working on it. So The reform of the week is from DeKalb County, Georgia, where they are taking drastic measures to curb truancy. According to state law, parents are required to ensure their students between the ages of 6 and 16 attend school. And if children have more than 10 unexcused absences and their parents don't attend a truancy meeting or show up in court, investigators are sent out to arrest them. The charge is educational neglect. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like criminal neglect, except the kids are suffering from dire bouts of illiteracy and fraction confusion. Yeah. Under this so-called operation back in school, parent Nicole Rourke, for example, was arrested because her child missed 112 days of school last year. Since there are, on average, 180 days of school in the school year, that means her child was in the school building only 68 days. The county apparently...
It's kind of like Rick Hess's record of being in the office.
The county apparently sent out multiple warning letters and even invited the guilty parents to an amnesty day. The worst offenders were children who missed a whopping 140 days of school. Over 300 parents have been charged with educational neglect in the past year, but only a handful warranted a home visit and some handcuffs to bring them in. If found guilty, Nicole and the other handful of law-breaking parentals face a maximum fine of $100 and up to 30 days in jail. So now to the rating part of this. I gave this an A for problem definition because they're finally starting to hold parents accountable for their role in their children's lives, and parents need to make their kids go to school. Mm-hmm. That's the bottom line. And I also gave it an A for execution. While this is not really the schools that are handling this, so to speak, it's more the county. I definitely think the government should be stepping in here, and perhaps I'd go even so far as to say that some parents shouldn't be parents in the first place. If you're only going to let your kid go to school for 68 days a year.
Let's talk about execution on that one. Wow. Oof. How does that work? Okay. Well, way to go to Cobb County, Georgia. Yeah. Oof. So, Stafford, let me ask you this. So, this whole thing about truancy, it strikes me that in some affluent communities, it is not all that unusual for parents to take their children out of school for some sort of family trip in the middle of the year, let's say to Walt Disney World or some exotic location. Mm-hmm. I mean, so what happens? Are those people guilty of truancy? I mean, can they get busted for this sort of thing?
And notice Mike's concerned because he and Megan have already planned to take Nico for 2 weeks of Disney in 2013.
So. I'm like, wait a minute, do I have to get that in before he goes into kindergarten? Or maybe just till he turns 6, I guess. That's mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I think the difference is there that those parents from affluent communities who are going to pull their kids out to go on vacation, they may give the school some crappy excuse, but they're actually talking to the school and saying, we're going to pull our kid out for X number of days. These are parents whose kids are just not showing up to school. And it's sort of unclear if their kids are just running around the neighborhood, but the parents can't be reached. The schools are trying to get in contact with them and the parents are not responding.
But now what if the kid, the bleeding heart response here is, but what about those parents who pack in the kids' lunch? Kids walk out, they get their Scooby-Doo backpack, mm-hmm. they get their little lunchbox, they walk out the door, they start heading to school, and then they go and spend the day engaging in illicit activities and come home sometime after 3:30 and announce that they had a good day of school. Mm-hmm. How can you really expect parents to know otherwise, Mike?
Tracking devices. That's how. I mean, that's where this is all heading, isn't it?
Stop. You rated that a D last time,
wasn't it? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I would say that parents, good parents, would know where their kids are. And if their kids are not in school, they'd know it.
Okay. Well, you're upset with me with tracking devices. You seem to imply that certain people shouldn't be allowed to have children. So how are you going to implement that one, Stafford?
Well, I think putting an ankle bracelet on kids may be a little excessive, but holding their parents accountable, I think that's slightly different. They're adults. You can't slap an ankle bracelet on a 10-year-old.
Well, some of their parents may not be adults. But that's
well, yes, that's a whole other issue.
Okay, well, thank you, Stafford, for rating that reform. We still need some snappy music for this one, don't we?
Yes.
Rick? That goes a long way.
It helps.
It helps. Okay.
Helps a lot.
Well, that is all the time we have for this week. We'll be back, like it or not, next week. Until then,
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, signing off.